Okay, good evening, everybody, and welcome back to Megillus Rus. Right at the end, we've got to the fourth perek, the fourth chapter, and we are on Pasuk Tes, verse 9. And as I've just said before we started the recording, there's quite a lot of chunky discussion in the Mefarshim on the next 9 psukim. The next 9 verses, there's a lot to say. And then, from there to the end, there's hardly anything to say, okay? So the next 9 verses are going to need quite a lot of focus. And I, Be'ezus Hashem, if I can, I told you last time I'm going to do something unusual. I'm going to do 9, 10, and half of 11. Then the other half of 11 and 12. So I can hopefully get through 9 through 12 in one block, okay? Is everyone all right with that? That's the plan. So we're now at chapter 4, verse 9. Come and join me. Oh, well, what? Hold on just a second. Where are we? Last week, we just did the fantastic concept of how Boaz used very shrewd reverse psychology on Toiv to get him of his own volition to sidestep his quite legal claim to be able to take Elimelech's tract of land and Rus. And very cleverly, utilizing extremely clever methods, he got Toiv to relinquish any rights by his own volition, which left him clean to go and get Rus. Now notice, none of this is any under any actual legal time pressure. The time pressure is under because Boaz was hastening to do it, and the Omi gave a brocha to say it should get done in one day. But apart from that, there's no actual legal time pressure. If this thing wouldn't happen for 6 months, perfectly in order, as soon as Boaz saw that Toiv has relinquished his rights, the next words that come out of his mouth is verse 9. He doesn't waste a second to get this done. And we'll see why later that was so important. Look at 4:9. Vayomer Boaz lezkenim, said Boaz to the elders. Now, rabbis and rabbitsons that are joining us for this, why did he get a bunch of zakenim, a bunch of elders, on top of the Sanhedrin, who he already had gathered there? There was already more than a quorum. There was already more than a minion. And yet he decided to get additional zakenim on top. Why did he do that? He wanted them, if you remember from last week, for the pronouncement of Sheva Brochus, the nuptial blessings. Ladies and gentlemen, in those days, there was no fixed script for Sheva Brochus. Every couple had elders or wise people which would turn up to their Suda or their Simcha and give them specific brochas based upon them through the wisdom of the sages that gave the brocha. So they would turn to Rabbi X, say, would you like to give a brocha? And the rabbi would say something that was in deep synchronicity with either the chosen, the color, or the situation, which would be a specific brocha for them with words that would be composed in an improvised manner right there and then. Now today, we can't expect such sagacious response from everyone to every chosen and color. So we have a fixed script of Sheva Brochus, which is said by everyone in an incredibly generic way, which covers any human being. It's just getting married, you know, may the chosen be gladdened by his wife. Think about how bland that is. That's wonderful, and we all want the brocha, but it's like a shehakol, isn't it? A shekel over a sweet or a drink of water is the whole world was created by God through his word. That's nowhere near as specific as hamotzi lechem in ha'aretz, right? Like specifically bread from the earth, which is a much higher order brocha. But the brochas that would be said in those days would be like, may Jeffrey and Nicola, if I want to use English names, grow in the way because Jeffrey's had a problem with X, may I give him a brocha and now that problem is overcome. We can't do that today because people just aren't of the ilk to do that. The Zakanim in this case are, and we're going to see their nuptial blessings on these psukim, one of the places that we learned out, that's how the actual brachas were made. We're going to see that they gave specific brachas directly towards Boaz and Rus. That's why the Zakanim are there, okay? The Zakanim are there for this purpose. Now, he gathered them in case Tov was going to marry Rus. Said, look, here are your Zakanim for the Sheva Brachas. And if you don't take her, then there'll be the Zakanim for my Sheva Brachas. But one way or another, we've got to get married now. Everyone comfortable? With that in mind, let's look at why he's addressing the Zakanim. V'yomer Boaz l'Zakanim, v'chol ha'am. And Boaz addressed all the elders and all the people. There was obviously a big group now. Think about it. It was Boaz was a very famous celebrity, known over Israel. The Sanhedrin are there. The Zakanim are there. And it's a very interesting case. And it's in the middle of town. So people gathered. It's the kind of thing you'd want to see what's going on. So there's a very large throng of people, right? So based upon this huge throng of people, there's a lot now. There's a lot there. So Boaz l'zikeinim v'cholaam, says Boaz to all the elders and the entire populace, right? And he says, Eidim atem hayoim, today you are all witnesses. Ki konusi, for I am acquiring eskol ashel Elimelech, everything that was going on with Elimelech. Whatever's left, I'm taking it on. Tov has stepped aside. I am the next redeemer, and I am going to acquire it. Ve'eis kol asher lechilion, and everything that also was in Chilion's inheritance, umachloin miyad ne'omi. Everything that was parceled up in the inheritance from Elimelech, Chilion and Machloin, from the hand of Naomi. Next pasuk. Ve'gam Esrus Hamoyavia, and also Ruth the Moabites, Eshes Machloin Konisi, the wife of Machloin I will acquire. Rabbis, why does he say Eshes Machloin and does not use the term Almona? She's not Machloin's wife, she's Machloin's widow. That clearly is wrong, right? To be discussed, okay, right? I'm going to take her Kanisi leave to me, Li'isha, as a wife. I am going to marry her, right? Why am I doing this? And he's saying to everybody, now what? Now think about it. Everyone's there. It's, I don't know, over 100 people. And these people, you know, understand what a Moabitess is. What would you think if a man in his 80s was marrying a woman in his 40s? Think she's half your age. Some say he was 400 years old. What's going on? I don't know. Are there no men her age? He wants to say, absolutely in public, Lahokim Shem Hamais, for I wish to perpetuate the name of the dead, Al Nachlosoi, over his inheritance, so that the name of the dead should not be cut off from his brethren. Now look at this. Umishar Makaimoi, or from the gate of his hometown. What? Why do I even need that? What does that even mean? Eidim atem hayom. You are all witnesses to this today. Rabbis and Rebbetzins, we already said this. If you look in the first pasuk, it says Eidim atem hayom. The same words in verse 9. Why is he closing out in verse 10? Eidim atem hayom. They've already been inaugurated as witnesses. You don't even need to tell them they're witnessing it. Verse 11. Now remember, as I said in the beginning, I'm only going to do half of verse 11. Then I'll come back to the other half once we've got through this bit, okay? So let's look at verse 11. We'll come back to verse 11 as well. V'yomru kol ha'am, and all the people that were there, where were they? Asher b'shar v'zakenim, in the gate with all the elders and all the adibs, and they said, Adim. That one word, Adim, is in inverted commas. They said, we're witnesses. Full stop. You can put a full stop in there. Then, Yitain Hashem es da 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 da. Now we're going to go into the Loshon of Brocha. So first of all, they said, we're witnesses. May God grant the woman a wonderful thing, and it's going to be gewaldik, much nachas and brocha, sach nachas, all the wonderful things that we're going to talk about in the rest of that verse. But really, that first half of the verse is them responding to his proclamation in the prior two verses. Is everyone up with the narrative so far? Yeah, we're comfortable? Okay. Then we'll begin. There's quite a lot to discuss here to get it clear and straight. First of all, obviously, as I've already mentioned, is why did he call Rus Eishes Machloin? That's got to be discussed. Another thing, by the way, which I pointed out, is what's his business with the gate of his hometown? Why does he need to know Umishar Makaimai? Why do I need to have that? The gate from his place. Also, if you look at verse 11, it seems that the people present needlessly are confirming that they're witnesses before they proceeded to bless Rus. What's going on there? Why do they have to say, yeah, we're witnesses? And moreover, the word Adim seems out of place altogether. What's going on? So it's like this. Let's just get a general intro to what Boaz is trying to do here. So, as we've said, the union between Boaz and Rus looks most odd. And just all the way from the beginning, all the way from the second parak, where Rus encounters Boaz for the first time, right from the beginning, what's he worried about? Loshon Hara Moti Shemra. He's worried about talebearers. Oh, she's my by tear, she's terrible, she's a sheikh, she does this. No, you can't say that about her. Let her stay with me. Right, remember the worker in the field who gave Rus a hard time? He slandered Rus. Boaz was very careful to be careful about that. When Rus came in to get parched grain, where she was sitting, he was always careful about her honour and her dignity that people wouldn't say bad things about her. So too, at this particular time, he's concerned that people are going to say, an Av Sanhedrin, a Dayan in Israel, is taking the daughter of a man whose nation has been disqualified by God. Whoever this Moabite woman is, her dad can't enter the congregation of Israel. Are there no nice Jewish ladies that this man couldn't enter into Knesset Israel with? What's going on? So people would have thought, if Boaz is truly an honourable nobleman, is there no one in Israel as princely as him that could possibly marry him? So Boaz was very, very concerned that people were going to be thinking like this. So what did he do? He said as follows. He says, you're my witness. You are all witnesses that my sole intention was in order to be able to keep the name of Machloin and Chilion and their estate alive. I am doing this lishma. And also, this woman Rus is like no other woman. She's Rus the Moabites. She's the good dove which has come from Moab, which everybody knows about. And she is the one I wish to marry. And it's only right that a woman of such high caliber as Rus should marry a man of such high caliber as me. So if you're thinking, oh, you know, such a lowly woman, I'm honoured to marry her. She's the good dove that everybody knows about. Everybody's heard there's going to be a good dove from Moab. She's the one. You're lucky to be here to see the whole thing happen. I'm going to marry her because it's only right the greatest man of the generation should do it. Oh, okay, fine. So it's a very choshev a shidduch. He wants everyone to think, ooh, well, he's only taking it on. Maybe Tov sidestepped it, is what they're going to think, because Tov is not choshev enough to marry such a choshev a convert. That's what he wants them to think. He made them all aware of the fact that Rus was also eligible for Yibam because the spirit of Mahlon had stuck to her, had remained attached to her, and therefore Mahlon's name would be perpetuated at the birth of whatever son would come out of this union, and that you need someone illustrious to do that, and I'm only marrying her to fulfill the mitzvah of Yibam. And he wants to impress everyone with his intense level of lishma, his sincere, only for the sake of heaven status, by informing them that they're all witnesses. They've clearly seen that everything that's belonged to Elimelech has legally gone over now to Boaz's domain. And just like the land has gone over, so too Rus has gone over to Boaz's domain as well. And I want you to witness the fact that I'm obligated to do so because of a mitzvah. Remember when Rus accosted, as it were, Boaz in the middle of the night on the threshing floor? And she really painted him into a very tough halachic position. She said, listen, whether you want to marry me or not, I'm not really giving you the option. I'm approaching you to be my redeemer, even though there's tithe. You have to marry me, else a mitzvah. I'm with the greatest of respect, you don't really have an option. You don't have an option. Number two is Naomi's telling me I'm the good dove of Moab, which means I'm the Gilgul of Lot's daughter, which means you have to give me a second chance at this. Do you hear what I'm saying? Is this making sense? No? Yes? Yeah? That's making sense? So that's very, very important. So, i.e., Boaz felt as if he was tied in to a mitzvah. And he's telling all these people, I guess over 100 people that are standing there, I'm only doing this to fulfill the mitzvah medaraisa of Yibam. That's what I'm hearing. You're all witnesses to that. Don't think I'm just trying to find myself a nice young lady and marry someone, you know, half my age. I'm doing this from the mitzvah. I'm going to the Sanhedrin in the middle of town in front of all of you. The whole thing was going to be taken by Tov. He said, no, I'll take up the slack. If he's not going to do it, I'll do it. Everyone says, yeah, okay, we see what's going on. We accept that. Notice he says she's the wife of Mahlon. She's not his widow. Why did he say Eishes Mahlon? He wanted to impress everyone in the room. Mahlon was still alive. You don't call someone a wife if she's a widow. You only call someone's wife if he's alive. He's alluding to the fact Mahlon is alive in her. That's what he's saying, Eishes Mahlon. Mahlon's alive in me. And therefore, I'm only doing this really for Mahlon. Because I've got a mitzvah. She's Eishes Mahlon. Oh no, fine, we get that. She's Mahlon's wife. That's like, she's not Mahlon's widow. She's Mahlon's wife. I'm marrying Mahlon's wife, Al Yibam. Okay, the fact that you're even seeing it like that is telling us that this has got to be Yibam true. Now, why did he say that the name of the dead should not be cut off? He said, the reason I'm doing this is to perpetuate the name of the deceased, so the name of the dead should not be cut off from his brethren and from the gate of his hometown, in verse 10. Yeah, you see that in verse 10? What's going on? Okay, this is deep, okay? I need you to really focus. This is quite mystical, okay? There's a Zohar Kodesh. The Zohar in the third volume, page 216b. That's the Zohar, volume 3, 216b, okay? It says like this. Eiv, Job, which we talked about right in the beginning, as saying how purity can be extracted from impurity, which is the story of Rus. Eiv was the son of a Yevomah. Eiv was the son of a Yevomah. That's what it says there. And that's why he was destined to suffer so greatly, because anyone born from the mitzvah of Yibam has a very tough fate. If you're born from Yibam, you're gonna have it rough. But I mean really rough. You're going to suffer greatly. And Eov suffered greatly, partly because of the mazal that he was born a Yibam, from a Yibam marriage. David HaMelech was the descendant from a Yavama, from Rus, and therefore he was destined to be a stillborn. He was destined to be a stillborn, die 3 hours after he was born. That was his destiny. If it wasn't for Adam, who foresaw this in Gan Eden, and forwarded him on account 70 years of his own life, David would have died basically as a stillborn. Adam then died at the age of 930 instead of 1000, which was his destined death date after the sin. So with all this in mind, that look, everybody knows that children from a Levirate marriage have it beyond rough. Everybody knows that. I know you're thinking that too. So Boaz wanted to say that the child born is only to perpetuate the name of Mahlon, and Be'ezus Hashem, he'll be preserved among his people and he won't be cut off from his brethren. May he not die. He's giving this unborn child, whoever he is, a brocha. May he not die. I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking, that he's likely to die, because children from such unions have a hard time. Now, unlike others born from Yavama, who were doomed to die, he will live. Now, should he or his descendants grow to become ruling authorities, they will not be cut off from the gate of his hometown. Why the gate? Where are they standing? Where's this all happening, by the way? By the gate. Why are they by the gate? Why are they by the gate right now? They're by the gate because that's where the courts are. If an individual is going to be by a gate, then they're probably going to be a ruler or a judge or a man of very high rank. And instead of that happening and then being cut, I want them not to be cut off. They should rise to authority and they shouldn't die. That's what it means by the gate of their people. So let this person retain their place as a Dayan if they become great, and they won't die in the gate of their hometown. Why did they say we're witnesses? Adam, we're Adam. They were saying, you are obviously imbued with Ruach HaKodesh. If you're giving such brachas that you already know that the child that's going to be born is going to be A, a boy, and B, a person of great standing, and C, is going to survive, you've got to be talking with Ruach HaKodesh. Therefore, we aren't able to deny it because it's clear that we're witnesses to God's will. Where else do we see it? This week's Parsha. This week's Parsha. Eliezer, Eved Avraham, goes in and finds Rivka, sits down with Besul and Lavan, and recounts the whole spiel. I came in and it was amazing. I came in, she went in the water and the camels. And what did they say? They're like, what can we say? It's clearly from God. This matter is openly hashkocha protest. Even us as Rishoyim, Basu and Lavan, the most no good nicks mentioned anywhere in Tyre. They're as bad as it gets. You know, some say Lavan was a Gilgul of Bilam. You're talking about the biggest Rishoyim ever. You know what I mean? They're like, yeah, well, this is pretty fair cop. I guess you better take Rivka then. It was so clear. They said, look, we're Adim, that this has to be from Hashem. What can we say to you? Either right or left. We can't say either good or evil. It's got to be this from Hashem. That's exactly what the people are saying. This is so clearly Ruach HaKodesh. We're aiding to the bizarreness of this situation. That's why they said, wow, we see this. This is hectic. Now let's go back to the rest of verse 11. Let's go back to the rest of verse. So that's got us to the point where they said, we're witnesses. We're witnesses. Verse 18, they all said, Adim. Yitain. Now this is the Sheva Brochus. This starts the Sheva Brochus, which is custom built for Boaz and Ruth, as it would be for any nuptial couple at that time. Now we get to hear from the people who were gathered. We don't know who these people are. We don't know who these people are. And just like the women that bless Naomi later, we don't know who these people are. But the brachas are so important, Shmuel and Avi had to write them in forever into Megillas Rus. As we'll see. Yitain Hashem es ha'isha. That's interesting. May God grant the woman. Why didn't they say Rus? He's already said V'gam es Rus ha'moavia eishes machlein. And also Ruth the Moabites, the wife of Mahlon. May God grant this woman. Why don't you mention her by name? Interesting. Who is coming into your house? Karachel Uchalaya. Now, rabbis, what immediately jumps out there is wrong? It should be Leah and then Rachel. Leah's older, right? It's Sarah, Rivka, Leah and Rachel, surely. Why are we blessing Rachel first by giving her the brocha of Rachel? That's interesting. Both of whom built the house of Israel. Mate, now that's interesting. If you're going to give them a brocha for building the house of Israel, Leah built a lot more than Rachel. So you should definitely mention Leah first, if that's what you're intending. May you be prosperous in Ephras and become famous in Beis Lochem. Now, Ephras is in Bethlehem. For those listening in Manchester, that's like saying, may you be prosperous in Salford and famous in Greater Manchester. May be prosperous in Barnet and famous in London. It's ridiculous. Is it? Why are you separating out Ephras and Beis Lochem? Do you hear? Is everyone? Let's talk about it. And then, okay, you know what? Let's do verse 12 as well. Vehi Veischa. May your house be like the house of Peretz. Asher Yolodo, Somali Yehuda. Ooh, they're mentioring Yehuda and Tamar. Of course, that's going to be significant spiritual bells ringing there. Who Tamar bore to Yehuda. Min Hazera, from the seed that God shall give you from this woman. Notice, look at min hana ara hazais, from this maiden. We got massive problems here. First of all, Boaz specifically said, I'm going to marry who? Rus hamoavia eishes machloin. Ruth the Moabites, the wife, which is the most dignified thing that she's been called so far, of Mahlon. Then in the beginning of the bracha, they call her this woman. Then at the end of this, they're calling her a maiden, a girl. She's going down and down and down in the appellations of what you could call. Boaz calls her a married woman. Gosh, of a woman. The next thing they call her just stammer woman, unmarried. And then they call her a girl, a young girl, a maiden. And why besides this particular maiden? What's going on? The Loshen is so unclear. Why have they said it like this? Just say, may Rus be blessed like Yehuda and Tamar. Give the bracha to her. I've got to tell you something before I go on. I saw Medrash Rus Rabba, Zayin Yud Dalad, that's 7:14, that said Rus was born without a womb at all. She didn't have a womb at all. And that day, God took some of her internal organs and fashioned a fully functioning womb that day for her. At that moment, as soon as she's getting married, Shem's literally taking her, I don't know, her kishkas, and like, taking it, right, we'll take a bit of fur, and right, make a womb. Fully functioning womb! Boom! She was completely infertile. And now she's getting all these brochas for fertility. Interesting. We'll see why that Medrash Rabba is going to be very important later. So there's loads of questions here as to what's going on, as we've said. Also, why should Boaz be blessed like the house of Peretz specifically? Wasn't it enough that she gets the brocha of Rochel and Leah, even though it should be Leah and Rochel? And why are we emphasizing that Peretz was born to Yehuda and Tamar, which she was? Wasn't that a well-known fact? Don't kids in school read the Chumash? Everyone knows Peretz was Yehuda and Tamar. What's going on? Also, what is the need for the pronoun lecha through the seed that you are going to be giving over? That's interesting. It says, Asher yitain Hashem lecha min hana'ara hazois. That's the seed that Tamar bore to Yehuda through the seed that God shall give you from this young maiden. Who else are we talking about? Whose seed would it be? They're getting married for Yibam. I don't understand. Who? What? Why would they say for you? Why they? What's going on? All right. Let's try to explain it in the most. Well, there's a lot to discuss. Obviously, it's been a very interesting day for the people standing around here. The Zakenim, the Sanhedrin, and the Amcha that are all standing there are watching with quite a shocked. This is a very unusual event. And you got this, you know, the most famous person in Israel marrying this Moaviah, which is interesting. People are asking, can you marry Moaviah? Yes, apparently you can. The law is it's the women, not the men, that you can marry. Didn't know. It's a very interesting halachic debate. And then the whole thing with the shoe coming off that we learned last time, is it according to Rav or is it according to Levi? Turns out we're passing by Rav, that actually, there's lots to discuss. And now they're watching all this Ruach HaKodesh go on with Boaz pronounce all these things. And now they're going to give over their brochas in a very specific way. And the people were unsure what's happening. So because of its oddness, they kept the loshen of their brocha very open. Let's see. Let's say there are those who gave the blessings. Let's call them the Zakenim. These were the elders that were there. They were in doubt as to whether or not this marriage to Rus and Boaz was full on Yibum or not. And indeed, in the first term, where we talked about it right in the beginning, it wasn't clear whether or not it's a full legal Yibum. It's like a quasi Yibum. So they're not sure. And they weren't sure if Machlon's spirit had remained with Rus, as Boaz is telling them he has. Eishes, Machlon. Yeah, the soul of Machlon is with... not so sure about that. Maybe you say so, right? However, they were sure, everyone now was sure, that Rus was the good dove from Moab. This has never happened before. It's got to be she's the one. Now let's assume that you are not actually Deraisa obligated to do Yibum with Rus. And she's essentially like any other woman you want to marry, and there's no mitzvah here. Yeah, do you know what I'm saying? Let's pretend that's an opportunity. Then they say, may God grant. We're not sure. So we're going to keep, rather than saying Baruch HaTov or something like that, we're going to keep it very open. If this is the case, may God grant. They aren't sure, so they start using a language which could convey any eventuality. If she is a real Yavama, as you say, then may it be. And if she isn't, may it be. It's very general blessing. The Al-Sheikh HaKadosh says that people might have felt bad for Boaz, that now that Toiv has sidestepped what's going on, that maybe he didn't really want to do this. Because people didn't know the whole thing with Yehud and Tamar and Boaz and Lot and his daughter and Gilgul. He could be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I've got myself into such a difficult situation here. I thought Toiv was going to take it. That's what people might have thought. That's what they might have thought. Therefore, they wanted to say a brocha that would cover any eventuality whether Boaz really did want to do this or whether he didn't want to do this. And let's try to understand what these brochas are. Let's try to get into it. So they were worded to take into account that the woman who is coming into your house, why did they say the woman that's coming into your house? That particular woman who was the daughter of a Moabite and who is forbidden to marry into the people of Israel, that man, she is coming into your house. She is. So the bracha that they're giving is intended to counteract the harm of evil gossip, that people are likely to say nasty things based upon her lineage, which is an unfortunate truism. What did they say? May God grant her like Rochel and Leah. Says the Medrash, Rochel had a lot of stick in her day. Much like Chana. You know, Chana was, she had a hard time. She had a hard time. Her hard time was that Peninnah used to constantly chepper her and other enemies. Have you daven for little booties? Have you got little baby grows? And they were trying to stimulate her to daven because she didn't have children. Rochel was under the same problem. People were giving Rochel a hard time. Also, Rochel, on top of the fact, was the daughter of Lavan. And she still didn't have children. So because people gave her a hard time, it's her that should come first in the bracha. Just like we want to give preeminence to Rochel because she was so special and the most beloved wife of Yaakov. We'll mention her first because she overcame the difficulty of Lashon Hara and the stress of not having children. May Rus not have that problem. May she get the bracha of Rochel and have children immediately. Leah was known to have taken the initiative in seeking a husband. So much so, swapping places with Rochel, that she should become the wife. And also later, she confronted him while he was going back to Rochel's tent because she had made a deal with Rochel for the dadaim, for the mandrakes or the jasmine or whatever they were, like medicine that Reuven had picked for her. And Rochel said, can I have some of that? And she said, yeah, but you know, we got to come to a deal. So she was very forthright in getting a husband. So too may the brocha of this woman getting a husband be like our matriarch Leah. So the people around wanted to give the brochas of Rochel and Leah and the specific difficulties that they've overcome in their own marriages to this woman who will suffer very similar problems unless we give a brocha to smooth the way. One, nobody should shepherd her. And two is she should find a husband like Leah. Okay? Oh, that's very interesting. I don't really have time. It says shtehem in the masculine. If you have a look at Pasuk Yud Aleph, it says, V'yomekola amasher b'shav z'keni made him. And then in the bracha it says, Ha'isha ha'ba'al b'isecha k'rochel u'chaleya asher banu shtehem, the two of them. Now the shtehem, the two of them, is finishing in a yud mem, which is a masculine suffix. That doesn't make sense. It should be shtehen with a nun, because we're talking about women and the plural of women should be with a nun. So it doesn't make sense grammatically. So the Chazal say the difference in gematria between shtehen and shtehem is 10, because mem is 40 and nun is 50. So the difference between shteihem and shteihen is the gematria is the value of 10. This alludes to the 10 commandments, because Yaakov was allowed to marry Rachel and Leah, because at that time they hadn't had the 10 commandments. And through them, the Jewish people would be built and earn the merit to the 10 commandments. So they're also putting in an additional nuance to the bracha, that just like you've said, may his name not be cast off from the gate, if he becomes a distinguished man, we're with you on that. May this man bring forth, as it were, the 10 commandments to the Jewish people, and may he bring forth Torah from this union as well. So that doubles up on the bracha in its lashon, which is why they use the masculine as opposed to the feminine to allude to 10, specifically the 10 commandments, which is a sign of Torah, Torah Shebiksav, which not only came from Rachel and Leah, but will come from the progeny of this Yibum union as well. Okay. Gemara Bava Basra, Tzadi Aleph, 91a. Did you know Boaz lost and buried 60 children? 60, not 16. He had 30 married sons and 30 married daughters, all of whom died in Beis Lechem. And he buried them all. 30. So he's had a lot of kids with a lot of different wives. And they've all died. They've all died. Now, it isn't clear. I couldn't find why they died. We don't see what the problem was. But people were surely aware of this history of this man. He's the man that buries his kids. Now, that's an important thing here. That's an important thing. Which is why he was trying to... People were thinking, you and having children that survive is not something that goes together. All the more so getting married by Yibum, where we know the child's meant to die anyway. So we've got to give you a bracha that indeed the child survives and perpetuates, unlike all the children that you've had prior. May this one survive. And why, Dafka, was he talking about Peretz, whom Tamar had bore to Yehuda? The answer is that when Yehuda was with Tamar, essentially he thought he was with a woman who was forbidden to him. Now, the truth is she was mutter to him through Yibum, but he thought she was a prostitute. So all of Yehuda, and Onan, who were Yehuda's other children, died. Notice Boaz's children have all died. But Peretz, who has survived from being born from Tamar, has had thousands of descendants. He's a very, very lucky man. He's got lots of... Peretz is a very famous man. Just like Peretz was born to Tamar through a Yibum with Yehuda, and he survived, may you also have a child which is established by Peretz surviving this kind of relationship and having lots of children. That's a very nice bracha for a man that's had a hard run. But far deeper than that, Boaz is Yehuda. And he has come back to tie up loose ends by totally kosher in front of Beis Din, getting married again via a Yibum, but fully aware and lishma. Rabbi say, listen to, he's totally aware what he's doing. He's taken off his shoe. He's acquired it. He's in front of Sanhedrin. He's in front of the Zakenim. He's in front of the entire populace. And he's stating openly, I'm completely lishma. The only reason I'm doing this is to fulfill a mitzvah. Completely different to meeting a woman at the crossroads in a veil. This is the ultimate way of doing Yibum. He did Yibum with Tamar as well. Tamar's perfectly mutter to marry him by Yibum too. Peretz survived, even though he was a son of a Yibum. So too may this child survive, just like Peretz, who's the progenitor of what's going on coming down into the Davidic dynasty. May this child also be Zeicha to build up Malchus Beis David, which is exactly what Oved is going to do. Oved and Yishai, etc., are going to give forth to David. So this clearly is Yehuda making amends with Tamar. And they're alluding to that by actually mentioning Yehuda, Tamar and Peretz by name. Because this looks very similar to that whole story. Why Beis Lechem and Ephras? Why Salford and Greater Manchester? Why Barnet and London? So it's interesting, the word Ephras is Loshen Pri. The root is Pri, which means fruit. So what does Pri-Beten mean? Literally fruit of the womb. When we're saying Ephras, which is your hometown, which is where you're going to be taking the tract, may it be literally a fruitful union where there'll be children who survive. Why Beis Lochem? Why the house of bread? Just like you, Boaz, who are too strong, Boaz, doubly strong, saved Klal Yisrael from war and famine, may the brocha of prosperity of bread, like a house full of bread, fill up not only your house with this woman, but all of Klal Yisrael. So when they're saying Ephras and Beis Lochem, they're saying literally, may there be fruit in this union and panosa for you and all Klal Yisrael. Very interesting. Very interesting, no? Also, let's have a quick look. If you have a look at 11, verse 11, Va'asei chayil, may you be prosperous, be'ephras, and in Beis Lochem, prosperous. What's this going with? Why have you got to be prosperous and crush shame and become famous? What's going on there? Prosperous and famous. So Va'asei chayil may be prosperous. Instead of the Yitain Lecha Hashem Chayil, may God grant you prosperity, and that the cross shame, may you be called a name, instead of the Tikra shame, you shall make for yourself a name, are expressions that Boaz would become prosperous and famous in the merit of all the things that he's already done for Klal Yisrael. We really rate you, Boaz, and we want you to go on to have a good, happy life with this woman. According to the Zohar Kodesh, in the second Chalik, Kuf Dalad, Amud Beis, that's 104b, Peretz was obviously a reincarnation of Ur. We know that the Yibum comes along to perpetuate the name of the deceased. So Peretz, who survived, was Ur reincarnate from Ur and Onan. Yehuda had unintentionally sinned, as it were, by having relations with Tamar, even though it was legal under Yibum, but he didn't do it with that intent. Yet Peretz was born to Tamar from Yehuda, and he survived, and he turned over Ur's sin. So too, they want to say that Boaz, in the merit of marrying Rus like this, would repair the evil that has been wrought with Machlon and Chilion, atoning for the problems that happened when they left Israel and married out of the fold, and may everything be corrected between them. Very interesting. By the way, can you humour me for just 5 minutes while I go slightly off-piste a bit? Is that okay? It's okay, can I? I've hit the bell. Are you with me? Stay with me, it's worth it. It's worth it. There is a Medrash Rabba on Tehillim, on Psalms, chapter 4, verse 5. It's a Medrash Rabba. It's in the name of Rav Abba Bar Chana. And it says there that David HaMelech was asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu almost in like a complaint. He was like exasperated. And he says to Hashem, how much longer are they going to provoke me by saying, is there not some kind of defect in his family that he's descended from Rus, who was a Moabiah? David has to come from a Moabites. That's how it works. That's weird. Is that your lineage? So David says, and he's saying this to God, why can't I say to Klal Yisrael, why are you bothering me? You all come from a man who married sisters. At the end of the day, Yaakov Avinu married four sisters. They were all daughters of Lavan, albeit from different wives. So technically, it's an incestuous relationship. Obviously, it was pre-Matan Torah. That's a bit different because Yaakov was not bound by the rules of Torah as yet. Okay, that's the Orach Chaim HaKadosh on 49.3, which is Parshas Vayechi, about Reuven, which is a fantastic thing to see. You must see it. It's amazing. Talks about why the Avos sometimes did things which are anti-Torah. Essentially, they tried to keep Torah as much as possible. But if something was absolutely vital for them to build Klal Yisrael, they had to do what they had to do to build up Knesset Yisrael, especially considering the Torah hadn't been given yet. But at the end of the day, Yaakov Avinu married four women, all of whom, after he married the first woman, Leah, everyone else would be forbidden to him. You can't marry a sister. So why are you giving me jip, says David HaMelech, that I come from a Moabites who converted Kosha V'Yosha by the time she married Boaz, and you're giving me jip when all Klal Yisrael comes from brothers and sisters. That's David HaMelech's plaint. Very interesting Medrash Rabbah, no? That he says this to Hashem. Why are they giving me hassle? We all come from a man who married sisters. The answer given is that God is very all-knowing. He knows what he's doing. And he knew how the nation of Israel would have to be built and whose seed would lend to its establishment. And even though his ways may seem very strange and puzzling to us at times, you've got to take into account that his particular methods do not have to appear logical to our minds. We are absolutely puny little human beings that cannot understand the will of the divine. And even though they may be logical to him, we may see them as illogical. Hence the concept of chukim, certain mitzvahs we just can't get our head around. Decrees. And God has his very own considerations and ways of doing things, and it was him that decided that the best way to build up Malchus Beis David was through Rus. And they were alluding to this in the Brocha of mentioning Yehuda, Tamar and Peretz. You know, odd things have happened. This is another odd thing. Clearly Yehuda, Tamar, Lot and his daughters, Rus and Boaz are all that's happened. This is it. Dovid and Bathsheba hasn't happened yet. But that's 3 out of 3 that they're mentioning right there, kind of thing. Notice it was Peretz that survived. And they were saying that it should be considered like any other kosher marriage, that the blood should survive. If you want to say this woman is a Yibam, then you're going to need, sorry, Yavama, and that you're marrying through Yibam, then you're going to need our extra brocha. But if it isn't really, you know, may Hashem bless you. If it isn't, we're going to keep our words very open and all-inclusive. If it isn't, and she's just like any woman, then may the blood survive. May it be in the merit of any regular marriage. May the children survive, just like Peretz survived with Tamar. Now, what's the meaning of the word hazois? Remember we said, this woman, asher yitain Hashem lecha min hana'ara hazois, that Hashem has given you with this woman, young woman, specific. What's the word of hazois? Why hazois? The word hazois is emphasized because only from this particular woman will God give you seed. We've seen from all your previous relationships that your children have died. But this one's different. This one is the good dove of Moab. May this particular wife and the blood from this union, may it survive. Through you and the spirit of Machloina within her, if you want to say she is indeed a Yavama, may your progeny be as successful as Peretz, even though Peretz was born from a mistaken Yibum. He survived. If this is really a Yibum, may your blood survive as well. Very interesting. Got a couple more minutes. We'll finish with this, if this is okay. So we can get all the way, I think, all the way up to verse 12, Pasuk Yud Beis, and finish. If I can, with one more thing about the thing with Ur and Onan. So much to say. There's a Zohar Kodesh regarding Peretz and Zerach, Ur, Onan, Machloin, Chilion. All these are all... One is always lost, one always wins. Notice it's Peretz, not Zerach. It's Ur, it's not Onan. It's Machloin, it's not Chilion. Can you notice this? There are always two brothers, one loses out. And then one comes back through Yibam. There's a cycle going on here, which the Zakenim, who are giving these Shiva Brachas, have seen. And they're concerned about what's going on. They're specifically saying, may your house be like the house of Peretz, who Tamar bore to Yehuda. But hold on. There was always Zerach as well. There's another kid involved. There's two kids here. Why are they only giving the bracha as Peretz and not the other kid? The message to Boaz from the Zakenim is like this. The Zakenim are saying something specifically to Boaz in this bracha. It's one of his Sheva brachas, right? You shouldn't wonder why God has chosen you to marry Rus. The Zakenim are now trying to ease Boaz's own feelings. He says, it's like this. He could have arranged for a brother of the deceased to have done so, which seems preferable. But Machlon's brothers could not have achieved that, just as Tamar could bear Peretz only to Yehuda and not to Yehuda's other son. So too, just like God organized that it's Yehuda that's going to have to be the father of Peretz, not Shelach, not the other son, who would be first in line, he's organized that you, not Toiv, marry Rus. Why? It must be for good reason. Just like Peretz survived because Yehuda was his father, it must be that whoever you're going to have is going to survive because Boaz is his father. It must be that this is Hashkacha Pratis. Don't worry that Toiv said no. That's why he says, from the seed that God gave you, you, what's this Lacha? It's got to be you and not a brother of Machloin or Toiv. It must be you specifically to do this deed. Only you and Rus can bring in a soul which will reunite Machloin properly back into the world, who will allow him to fulfill his destiny. Our brocha is, says the Zakenim, that your house will be like the house of Peretz, and with your merit, the offspring will have a schus, some kind of a deep merit, that your union will succeed and bring forth Malchus based Ovid. Notice when they're saying the word seed, Chazal say that they are alluding, this is Rus Rabba, Zain Tes Vov, that says this. They're alluding through the seed that Lot's daughter had gained in order to perpetuate all humanity. May now all humanity be perpetuated through this seed, through Malchus Beis David, which would be the Messiah which will perpetuate all humanity. Just like all humanity was perpetuated by them because they thought a Holocaust had happened, at the end of days, the Messiah, who will be a descendant of David, will keep all humanity going. They're blessing Boaz that the seed of this union will end up with the Messiah, which all humanity will need, referencing Light. So they're referencing Light and his daughter. They're referencing Yehuda, Tamar and Peretz. Now they're referencing Rus and Boaz. They're starting to, they're seeing the, if this is the case, and she is the good dove, you're going to need a lot of brachas. Why don't exist Hanara, this particular young woman, this maiden? This young woman was chosen to realize the young woman who was the daughter of Lot, who was as yet not married. Light says to the people knocking on the door, bring out the men that we may know them, the angels that came to visit Sodom. And he goes, no, no, my masters, I have two young women, virgins who have not known a man. Take them, do what you want to them. Perplexing, no? Take them, do what you want to, but just leave the men alone. So we see the daughters of Light were called young maidens. Now they say the maiden, inverted commas, i.e. Lot's daughter, this maiden you're taking, may she fulfill the ticket of Lot's daughter. Specifically referring to her as one of those maidens. That's the good dove. They look, look, if this really is, look, we're not sure, okay? You're obviously sure, you're doing Yibam with her. But we're not sure, it could be that this really is all you're saying it's piped up to be. If it is, then may she make the tikkun all the way from Light. You need a bracha for that. So we'll mention it by alluding to the fact that we'll say, min hana'ara hazais, that maiden. You know who it's, that specific maiden, Lot's maiden. If that's the case, you need the bracha. No wonder we have to say a script of Sheva Brachas these days. Who is so perceptive to be able to give the Chosan HaKala such absolutely exacting brachas? We have to have a script. Bez Hashem, next time, we'll do Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet, and Tesvav. And that really is the mainstay of that. Then we've got to talk about Naomi's relationship with the child. And why she raised him. Really important. And that's in Tesvav Yud Zayin, that's in 16, 17. And then all the rest of Pesukim are one block. 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 is one idea. So all we need to do essentially is understand the rest of this bracha, why Naomi is getting re-involved, and then close out the whole thing. And then from there, if we can discuss the concept of David and Bathsheba, we can essentially tie up the whole inyan. Thank you very, very much for joining tonight. I look forward, please God, to seeing you next week. And if there's any questions, we'll do it now.